The Life of Gustavus Adolphus, The Quest for Maria Eleonora, Part 5. Now, Jorge Wilhelm was appalled when he heard what had happened. He had recently informed his mother that out of consideration for Poland, he had decided to refuse his consent to any family alliance of this sort. He had ordered Maria Eleonora to come to him in Prussia. And now everything seemed to be working in precisely the opposite direction. In this situation, the elector plunged into feverish diplomatic activity. He washed his hands of the business before all the world in letters to the various courts of Europe with loud lamentations at his mother's independent action. And he dispatched to Poland an embassy charged with the task of proving his complete innocence. Jorge Wilhelm hoped to be able to satisfy Sigismund of such assurances, and by a humble explanation that he had no power to stop his sister's marriage with a man of equal rank, provided that it had his mother's consent. Sigismund's answer, however, exceeded his gloomiest anticipations. Sigismund enjoined him to break off this menacing alliance once and for all, and to demonstrate thereby that he would have nothing to do with that Gustav who, having inherited his father's perfidy, was now shamelessly usurping his own kingdom of Sweden. What was Jorge Wilhelm to do? Well, he ordered the secret council in Berlin to protest in his name. If the Electress Dowager persisted in pushing on the match, and he wrote to Gustav Adolf and informed him that for the present, until Sweden and Poland had settled their differences, he must refuse his consent. It is extremely unlikely that Jorge Wilhelm imagined that this counteroffensive would serve any other purpose than to demonstrate his goodwill towards his Polish suzerain. At any rate, events moved too quickly for him. The old Electress, now Gustav Adolphus' most devout ally, was resolved to strike while the iron was hot. She spirited away her Mariechen, who had recently shown disturbingly feverish symptoms, to Brunswick territory, out of reach of her brother. When Axel Oxenstierna arrived in Berlin early in the autumn at the head of a dignified embassy to complete the necessary formalities, he found that her support made his task a comparatively easy one. With this usual diplomatic ability, the Swedish Chancellor succeeded in carrying his point at a series of conferences with the Electoral Council. With imperturbable pertinacity, he extracted and dispatched their cautiously worded assent. Their hesitation was obvious, but they made no protest. By the time the counter-order from Jorge Wilhelm arrived, Oxenstierna was already in possession of repeated assurances from the other contracting parties, which put the adoption of a strong line out of the question. The whole arrangement, in fact, depended upon patri protestis, of which Anna was the representative. A survey of the position left Oxenstierna with the impression that the elector, in spite of everything, was not sorry to see the marriage arranged. The impression was an accurate one, insofar as Jorge Wilhelm's main objective was to avoid all responsibility. He had, for instance, recently collected opinions from German jurists in support of his contention that he could not, as a brother, hinder his sister's marriage with the King of Sweden, and he continued to stay in Prussia, though he was well aware of the increased risk which his own absence from the scene might involve. By agreement with the Electress Dowager, Oxenstierna had proceeded from Berlin to the court of Wolfenbüttel to fetch the Princess Anna, who intended to go with her to Sweden. Prepared for departure in a somewhat pugnacious temper, her son had returned no answer to her request for a traveling allowance, but she did not shirk from providing herself with a selection of objects of value from the exchequer by the way of compensation, and as pledges for Maria Eleonora's trousseau. In her irritation, she openly threatened him with a demand for reimbursement from Sweden, which caused Gustav Adolf some embarrassment when he heard of it. In the middle of September, he left Berlin with her youngest daughter, Katharina, and shortly thereafter joined the Chancellor and Maria Eleonora at Mecklenburg. A detachment of the Swedish fleet, under the command of Gillenheim, took them over to Kalmar, where Gustav Adolf was impatiently awaiting them. The wedding took place in Stockholm on November the 25th, 1620. 3 days later, Maria Eleonora was crowned queen in the great church. In honor of the ceremony, a merry comedy was performed upon a subject taken from the history of Ulf Skontkrung, doubtless a good deal less exciting than the drama of real life which had now, after several acts of suspense, been so happily ended. And, as things turned out, the astrologers had been right all along. Gustav Adolf married when he had completed his 25th year. Now, what we'll be doing next is we're going to go through the life of Gustav and Maria, their whole life, and that'll be about 4 or 5 shows. And after that, then we'll get into Gustav Adolphus and let him march into history. The sources for this are Gustavus Adolphus versus Wallenstein by Pike, Gustav Adolphus, Sweden and the 30 Years' War, 1630-32, by Volk, The Lion of the North by Henty, Gustav Adolphus the Great by Onlund, and Gustav Adolphus and the Rise of Sweden by Roberts, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 1, Infantry, by Brzezinski, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 2, Cavalry, by Brzezinski. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise. If you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.